Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
With two-a-days training camp practices winding down in both college football and in the NFL, that means real football action is soon to happen in both leagues. This is Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and streaming live on ESPN+. Both Shanae and Gojo are out on this lovely Friday, so I'm Courtney Cronin. She's Katie George. We're keeping you company for the next 2 hours here on ESPN Radio. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests on Shanae and Golic Jr. appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Be sure to join us on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Join in the conversation. My Twitter handle at Courtney R. Cronin. Katie's at Katie_George05. You can also give us a call, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Okay, so earlier this week, we're talking about college football, and the Big Ten, ACC, and Pac-12 decided to counter the SEC's punch with adding Oklahoma and Texas, Katie, by forming their own group called the Alliance. And this is supposed to stabilize college athletics because these three conferences have mirroring values, one of which they believe is graduating their student athletes. If that isn't a shot at the SEC, especially football, I do not know what is. But as we're trying to parse through this thing and figuring out what does this alliance actually mean, what is it going to do to change the landscape of college football? In effect, scheduling, too, because we really don't know when all these things are going to take place and what the scheduling is going to look like. But since you're the college football expert here on this show, I wanted to kind of pick your brain and figure out what do I need to actually be worried about and what do I need to care about with the alliance as it stands right now on August 27th, because we know none of this stuff is going to take effect this year in the 2021 season. But looking a year out, 2 years out, as we get to 2022 and 2023, where should we start with this alliance that's forming between these three Power Five conferences?
Well, I don't think, Courtney, you need to be worried in the immediate right now, okay? Because what they said on Tuesday didn't change a whole lot of things moving forward, because these three commissioners have a conservative approach and viewpoint on wanting to keep things the way that they are right now as it pertains to college athletics, right? They don't want to get so far away from its current identity because they think that some things, how they are now, are going really well. Now, as it pertains to NIL, the current demise of the NCAA, as well as Texas and Oklahoma jumping ship and wanting to join the SEC, they want to provide stability, right? And they felt like coming together, three like-minded individuals, gentlemen, who represent 41 institutions that are like-minded as well, they wanted to kind of put a foothold in and say, hey, if you've got my back, I've got yours. Let's not poach anybody in response to Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12 eventually to join the SEC ranks. And I was impacted directly by what happened in 2011, 2012, and 2013 when one domino fell and it felt like it was an arms race, right? Everybody was starting to grab new members and people were stopping for a season here and then they were joining a new conference, which was going to be their new home for years to come. When I was a senior in high school going to the University of Louisville the next year, we were in the Big East Conference, right? That was 2011. Well, when I arrived on campus in 2012, we played in the Big East, great conference, phenomenal basketball conference, if you can remember at its core. My sophomore year, we then moved into the American Conference, which was this holding pattern, okay? And then my junior year, we went into the Atlantic Coast Conference, which is where the University of Louisville remains. Three conferences in three seasons. I don't know how many student athletes can tell you that they've played in three conferences, but my point in telling that story is there were so many changes made back then. I think these three individuals got together and said, let's not have another situation like that where dominoes start to fall and people make rash decisions just because they feel like they have to do something in response to Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC. Let's just hang tight, gather information, and let's band together here because there are two really important meetings coming up, right? One in September as it pertains to the college football playoff expansion, and then the second coming in November in terms of the NCAA restructuring itself, right? So these three men want to have a say in what the future of college athletics looks like, as well as college football in particular. So they want to be on the same page when they go to these meetings. Two of the three said that they are very much in favor of expanding the college football playoff. They just don't know exactly what that's going to look like, if they think 12 is the right number. The ACC commissioner, Jim Phillips, was the only one that said, as of right now, the ACC is undecided, which I found to be very interesting. But that is coming after two of the most prominent college football coaches in the country, and Mack Brown and Dabo Swinney both said that they were not for a 12-team playoff situation. So it'll be really interesting to see the ramifications of this new alliance. But in the immediacy, I don't think a lot changes right now.
She's Katie George. I'm Courtney Cronin. This is Sinead Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live on ESPN Plus. Now, one conference of the alliance that is decided on not expanding its member institutions right now is the Pac-12. Commissioner George Kliavkov. Am I saying that right? I feel like the V. It's a really hard name. I've tried. I cover the NFL. Let's just like chalk it up to that. But like I've literally been practicing that because I knew I was going to bring this topic up.
I'm with you.
And he said yesterday, earlier this week, that they're not going to expand. They're not looking to expand at this time. So that leaves the door open for the Pac-12 to bring expansion talks to the table at some point in the near future. But as we know of right now, this is not part of what they're planning to do. But that makes me wonder what's going to happen to those Big 12 teams that are now effectively the Big 8. Like, if they're not going to go to the Pac-12, the Big Ten has not ruled out expansion. The ACC, I don't know where they stand on it. Where do you think any of those programs go if the Pac-12 says right now that they're closed for business?
Well, I think because they looked each other in the eye and they trusted one another, I think that the Big Ten and the ACC will keep their word for right now, and they will hold put as well. It was interesting. On Tuesday, the three commissioners got together on a Zoom conference. They went around the table, made their statements as to why this alliance was important, and then they opened it up to questions from various reporters, and different people were chiming in. Well, as soon as that hour-long press conference came to a close, there was a media scrum where a couple ESPN reporters were able to get on the phone with different commissioners, one being George Kliavkov. And I agree with you. It's very hard to say. That V kind of sneaks in there for you. But he said after the press conference, where a lot of words were said, mind you, in that hour, oh, by the way, we are going to discuss expansion and we'll let you know at the end of the week if, in fact, we are going to add more teams. And it was like, we can't just drop that bomb after you just sat in front of us for an hour and you didn't say anything about it. So it was interesting. These last few days, there was a subcommittee within the Pac-12, a couple ADs, a couple presidents who got together, and they really looked at, would it benefit us right now to bring somebody into the fold? Maybe a Big 12 team, right? Because it would change the Pac-12's blueprint geographically. They would get into a different time zone, be able to play games on a different time slot on television, which would help branding for different schools, right? Because Pac-12, they play their games so late just based on being in the Pacific time zone. So they right now said they like their 12-member situation and structure. They don't feel the need to make any changes. You got to believe, though, the Big 12, who's currently in purgatory, they feel a need that they've got to start adding people. Now, is that right now or is that going to be in the future? If they want to survive all of the shifts that we've currently seen with Texas and Oklahoma saying goodbye, they've got to add people, maybe like a BYU, right? That currently is in the rumor mill. That would make sense geographically and from an ideology standpoint. Cincinnati from the American, I think, is a great football power. They just played in a January 6th bowl, right? They have a great program that's currently building so much momentum. Also a good basketball school as well. Memphis, I think you'll see the Big 12 turn to a lot of the American schools and have conversations of, hey, is there a marriage that could be a happy one moving forward? But you've got to believe that Bob Bowlsby is trying to do everything in his power right now to lead this conference through some pretty big turmoil.
And as ESPN college football reporter Heather Dinich reported earlier today, there was a four-person subcommittee from the Big 12 meeting to discuss talks of expansion. But, you know, circling it back here to the Pac-12, they may not be worried about expansion right now, but there is that date you mentioned, that September 28th meeting for the college football playoff committee. And if you're the Pac-12, you're trying to figure out how you can best position yourself to be part of more of those conversations if the playoff does does indeed expand to 12 teams. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. You could save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit progressive.com. Straight ahead, which rookie quarterback is in the best position to succeed immediately? Katie and I will bring all of that back into the forefront here on Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live on ESPN+.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Three of the NFL preseason kicks off tonight. A slate of games on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday before all 32 teams across the league have to cut down their rosters from 80 players to 53 on Tuesday, August 31st. This is Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, and Sirius XM Channel 80. I'm Courtney Cronin. She's Katie George. You can follow us on Twitter at Courtney R. Cronin and at Katie_George05. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests on Shanae and Golic Jr. appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Now, we have a tweet up at ESPN Radio that pertains to the NFL preseason and the final slate of games that we have on tap this weekend. And, of course, it has to deal with rookie quarterbacks, because what else are we talking about at this time of year, Katie George? Can you read that tweet for me and let me know where people stand about where the rookie quarterbacks are at this point?
I would love to. We put out on ESPN Radio the hashtag Shanae and Golic Jr. weekend preview poll. Which rookie QB is in the best position to succeed immediately this season via Geico? I'm kind of surprised. I'm going to be honest,
too,
Courtney.
Looking at this.
Justin Fields is winning by 49%. People believe that he is in the best position to succeed immediately this season, even though Matt Nagy named Andy Dalton the week one starter, so just keep that in your back pocket. Trevor Lawrence got a whopping 9%. Zach Wilson, 27%. And then we put other, you could write it in at 15%, that being, say, Trey Lance as one out in San Francisco, if he is, in fact, going to be named the day one starter and he beats out Jimmy Garoppolo, but that one is still unknown. Another one could have been Mac Jones, but he's also in a tight race with Cam Newton as well.
Yeah, that was the problem with Twitter, because you're only allowed to have four spots, four answers for a Twitter poll, and there are five first-round quarterbacks, so shame on Twitter for not changing the rules for us here at ESPN Radio. Weekend Preview is brought to you by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. So the key word in that question is succeed immediately, meaning right now, in my mind, meaning week one of the regular season. And when you're taking over week one, the regular season, there's only two quarterbacks that are rookies that we know that will be in that position. That's Trevor Lawrence, who Urban Meyer named the starting quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars for their week one opener.
Thank you for doing that, by the way, Courtney.
About time.
God, my goodness.
About time.
Were you on that same page of what are we waiting for? Why are you keeping him from one reps and going back and forth with Gardner?
Yeah, I definitely was, because I saw it as Urban trying to implement the college game and all of that shtick down in Jacksonville. But if I'm trying to be devil's advocate here and look at the caveat, is you're going to put Trevor Lawrence and risk him behind that offensive line week one. That's fair. I mean, it's going to be a long season for him, which, you know, should effectively stop the trade talk or thinking of Gardner Minshew as potential trade bait. You're going to want that guy to be playing in the second half of these blowout games, because you're probably going to lose a lot of games in Jacksonville this year, which, you know, if we're talking about Trevor Lawrence and where he falls in this mix, he was one, I don't know the percentage, I think it was pretty low.
9%
of whether he's going to succeed week one. That's probably right, because he's going to have a really tough time this year. I mean, you saw him in that Monday night game against the Saints this past weekend. He was getting absolutely rocked behind that offensive line, and this is somebody who didn't get pressured all that much at Clemson during his final season in 2020. So that's going to be a tough uphill battle for him. But I just keep going back to this Justin Fields thing of 49% of our followers here at the ESPN Radio Twitter feed had voted that he's in the best position to succeed immediately. Matt Nagy has remained steadfast, Katie, that Andy Dalton is the week one starter, and I believe him. Yes, Justin Fields has a chance to go out and show some really remarkable things about his abilities in this preseason finale at Tennessee. It's his first, you know, chance to do it on the road and all of that, which will be great, but I just don't see any chance for Matt Nagy to make to change his mind at this point, considering he's been so gung-ho on the Andy Dalton train and not wanting to rush along the development of your franchise quarterback in Justin Fields.
Yeah, and mind you, they play the LA Rams week one, and Aaron Donald is on the other side. So that man is a murderer on the field. So I could understand not wanting to put your franchise quarterback out in front of that as a sacrificial lamb, if you will. But as I look at this question and I think about it, my mind immediately goes out west to Trey Lance. I know that he's in a quarterback battle with Jimmy Garoppolo, and Kyle Shanahan's not in a position to name the starter quite yet. He doesn't feel a need to, which... to each their own, if that's your prerogative, fine. I think that Trey Lance would be in a position to immediately succeed, even though he's inexperienced and it's been a long time since he's played in a high-level college football game, or football game for that matter. Mm-hmm. But when you look around who's by him, the supporting cast, who's in positions next to him, my goodness, the San Francisco 49ers have a great roster already put in place that's primed to make a deep run in the playoffs this season if they can get things figured out at the quarterback position and somebody can stay healthy, right? I mean, that's been the issue with Jimmy Garoppolo for the last few seasons. They've got a great running back core, great young receivers who can make explosive plays. And then, oh, by the way, you have George Kittle at tight end, and they have a phenomenal defense on the other side. So if you were just talking about who can succeed right now, I think if Trey Lance wins that job, he's an easy answer, because you mentioned Trevor Lawrence. They've got some issues that they've got to work out down in Jacksonville. Justin Fields obviously has an offensive line that's a bit shaky and injury prone as well. Zach Wilson, I think, has been the best rookie quarterback through the preseason, but I don't think the roster of the Jets stack up when you compare them to the 49ers. I think the 49ers roster and who would be around Trey Lance if he did win that job would just put him in a position to succeed more so than those other rookie quarterbacks.
Be sure to tune in to an American League battle on Sunday as the Oakland A's host New York Yankees, presented by Samsung Galaxy. Coverage of Sunday Night Baseball begins at 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, and at 7 p.m. over on ESPN. Straight ahead, we're going to talk more about rookie quarterbacks and how concerned we should be about Trevor Lawrence and that offensive line long term. We'll talk with an expert next, ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golden Jr., the podcast.
Whole lot of preseason action kicking off tonight, Friday, August 27th. We've got Colts at Lions, Steelers at Panthers, Eagles at Jets, and Vikings at Chiefs. This is Shanae and Golic on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Shanae and Golic Jr., mind you. It's not like I've hosted this show a bunch of times. I'm Corey Cronin. She's Katie George. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and here to help us wrap up some of the preseason action we're going to see in Week 3, ESPN NFL insider Jeff Darlington joining us via the Goodyear Hotline. Jeff, I want to start out with two things we heard in San Francisco from quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo and head coach Kyle Shanahan. Shanahan says he doesn't need to name a starter. He doesn't need any sort of timeline or any sort of arbitrary notion that there needs to be one put out there. And Garoppolo said he knows who's going to be starting week one. So parse through all of that and tell me what that means about who's going to be under center in week one for the 49ers.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that Jimmy G is going to be under center. I mean, to your point, like Jimmy's comment where he smiled as he said it, that he's pretty happy with Kyle's decision. I think that spoke volumes. And I understand what Kyle's trying to do, too. You know, these head coaches like to get cute with their competitive advantages and whatnot. And honestly, like, I don't expect, even, for instance, like, even in New England, like, I don't expect Belichick to – I mean, I could see him taking all the way to the Wednesday before the opening regular season game, just from the standpoint that this is the one chance you have to kind of make your opponent prepare for maybe two potential quarterbacks. But that, to me – is what Kyle's probably doing, but he also seemed, even if you listen to the context, the way he said it, it felt pretty clear that Jimmy will be the starter.
Jeff, you had a chance to sit down with the number one overall draft pick in Trevor Lawrence over the weekend prior to their Monday night game against the New Orleans Saints. And I first just want to ask you, what was your biggest takeaway from having a conversation and a one-on-one sit down with Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah, my takeaway on the macro level was, man, he is like an impressive individual. Like, I've never met him, and he just has a a really good presence about him. He just, first of all, really kind, really nice, just great person. And then still though, one of those guys where he walks in the room and you're like, you know, that feels like an important quarterback right there. But he, I would say the thing from the conversation that stood out the most to me was he kind of talked about that he doesn't feel like that it should take that long to win. Like basically like they should not be, you know, Urban Meyer has said, we don't need to have a 5-year plan. He said he's talked to Urban a lot about that, about how we feel like we can win faster than people expect us to. And we feel like that starts with the quarterback position. So fast forward to, you know, kind of another mediocre preseason performance and Urban finally naming him the starter. And it's kind of like, yeah, like that probably should have happened sooner. If you want your quarterback to get there fast, you should probably have him taking all the first team reps. So I think that maybe took a little longer than they should have, but you know, now they're there and now Trevor can really get comfortable with the first team.
Having said that, Jeff, what did you think of the performance from the Jaguars in the preseason game against the Saints? Because I appreciate what Trevor says, and I hope they can win quicker than people expect.
No, I'm with you.
But with the offensive performance or lack thereof, I think some people left scratching their heads as of their offensive system right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not overly inclined to overreact to the preseason, as I know like we always throw that cliche disclaimer out there. Like, I'm not overreacting. It's just the preseason. But they clearly lack an identity. And sometimes, you know, they're not showing all their cards. In week one, they'll break out the full offense. Maybe it'll look a little bit better. But I do think that, again, going back to the idea of, like, naming him the starter, it probably should have happened sooner. I think the benefit of Trevor Lawrence practicing with the first-team offense on a more regular basis outweighs the benefit of, like, pretending that he needs to earn the job. So, you know, this, I guess, is the consequence of that. Well, I mean, I guess the Jaguars should hope this is the consequence of that, and that with time, they will get an identity, they will have better chemistry, and they'll look more like the product that Trevor and Urban want.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Protecting your email business is a big deal. Your small business is a big deal. Cover what you've worked for so hard. Visit ProgressiveCommercial.com. ESPN NFL insider Jeff Darlington joins us via the Goodyear hotline. The Saints named Jameis Winston the starting quarterback for week one today, a day ahead of their preseason finale against the Cardinals on Saturday. Why do you think Sean Payton took this thing out until the last possible moment of the preseason to name a starter?
Yeah, it's funny because that was the one all offseason how I talked about I felt like would be resolved the fastest because, you know, Sean recognized that these quarterbacks are very different. And I'm not saying that there aren't other scenarios or situations that have quarterbacks that run different systems, but that is like a totally different offense if you have Jameis Winston under center or Taysom Hill. So, yeah, I was surprised, but at the same time, you know, I think Sean really wanted to see somebody take the reins and he actually got that thing that the head coaches always want in their quarterback competitions, which is a glaring moment of objective production, which we saw in game two of the preseason from Jameis. I mean, he had two touchdowns over 40 yards of air distance. The Saints haven't had a single touchdown over 40 yards of air distance in the last two seasons. Like, that is what Sean Payton wants. He wants a vertical passing game. And he saw it, and he got it, and he made the decision. But to your point, I think Sean really wanted to make the decision sooner, too.
9 of 10, 123 passing yards, and two touchdowns. A statement performance from Jameis Winston on Monday Night Football, indeed. And it earned him the starting job for the Saints quarterback position going into the 2021 season. Jeff Darlington, ESPN NFL insider, joining us here on Shanae and Golic Jr. Jeff, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it. Thanks,
yeah.
Jeff.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you. All right. See you guys.
All right, straight ahead, Katie and I will talk about the latest changes to the NFL's COVID-19 policy that are being proposed, and we'll see whether they will actually be implemented before the start of the regular season. That's next here on Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+. But first, a message from Capital One. Capital One Shopping Everyone likes to shop online, but searching for coupon codes is kind of a bummer. So make saving online a breeze with Capital One Shopping. Capital One Shopping is a free tool that instantly searches for available coupon codes and automatically applies them at checkout. Just download Capital One Shopping to your computer and let it do the work for you. So easy, and you don't even need a Capital One card to use it. Capital One Shopping, it's kind of genius. What's in your wallet? Savings and available coupons vary.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
This is Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, the ESPN app, and streaming live on ESPN+. Shanae and Mike are off today. Courtney Cronin and Katie George keeping you company on this Friday evening. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Want to join in the conversation here on Shanae and Gojo? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. A little bit of breaking news coming out of the Big Easy. This from the Saints Twitter account. Due to the impending impact of Hurricane Ida, the Saints-Cardinals game, which was scheduled for Saturday and then moved up to 12 p.m. Central Time on Saturday, that game has been canceled. So again, the hurricane that is headed towards southern Louisiana impacting the playability of Saints-Cardinals, which is now canceled on Saturday. Katie, we talked about COVID and the new protocols that the NFL and the NFLPA have been discussing over the last 24 hours. There was a conference call yesterday afternoon with NFL Chief Medical Officer Dr. Alan Sills, and the proposal between the NFL and NFLPA that the league is recommending COVID-19 players are tested for COVID-19 once every 7 days. That's for vaccinated players as opposed to once every 14 days due to the Delta variant spreading and the various transmissions that, you know, are starting to pop up with the COVID-19 and the virus and what's expected there in the future. So that proposal was put forth to the NFLPA, which that itself had required that requested daily testing to begin last month. So there's a lot to parse through here, because when we talk about players who are vaccinated and unvaccinated, it was actually the Players Association which, you know, has put up this barrier that no, you're not going to force our players to get vaccinated. It's going to be their choice to do so. But we are recommending that we have daily testing among everybody, vaccinated and unvaccinated. But then the NFL, when they were making rules for training camp in the preseason, said, well, vaccinated players can test once every 14 days. Unvaccinated players are going to have to test every single day. So now it comes down, at least in this proposal, to once every 7 days, once a week for vaccinated players. So I think a lot of this comes on the heels, too, of Cole Beasley. You know, he tweeted yesterday about being fined by the NFL. Isaiah McKenzie, his teammate there in Buffalo, were also fined by the NFL for, you know, and Cole Beasley in the situation with the trainer there in Buffalo. A vaccinated trainer got COVID. Cole Beasley was wearing a mask. He is unvaccinated. He's been very vocal about it. He had to miss several days of practice while being in isolation as deemed a high-risk close contact. But he also, if you go to his Twitter account, he tweeted something, or retweeted his teammate, Jonathan Feliciano, and he had a pretty good tweet here. I'm going to read it to you. It said, quote, we repeatedly see vaccinated people get COVID and other people get sick regardless of their vaccination status. If us vaccinated people get tested more frequently, like the PA has asked, then we could avoid situations like we're in. Just because some people aren't vaccinated shouldn't mean we treat them as a POS. You know what that means. So I actually really thought that that was a very wise tweet that he said. And it seems like the NFLPA is continuing to push this forward, and that the NFL might actually be willing to change its COVID-19 protocols, because once every 2 weeks, I feel like leaves the door open for someone to get COVID and slip through the cracks. And then you test them 14 days later and you realize that all of these vaccinated players potentially, who are only subjected to getting tested once every 2 weeks, might have contracted the virus in that time by limiting that window for transmission and for finding out who might be positive, who might not be in exposure. I think that probably does locker rooms a bit of justice here in trying to contain any sort of outbreaks that teams might face this season.
Yeah, it's interesting because they're coming off of a season where they were all tested daily, right? So they knew exactly where they stood prior to entering the NFL training facilities. Now, that came as a decision because we did not have access to vaccines at that point. Now we do. And I believe it was the NFL's decision of trying to incentivize vaccinated players. Hey, you only have to test every 2 weeks. If you're unvaccinated, you have to continue with the daily testing. Well, now you're seeing vaccinated players not have that peace of mind because you are seeing so many cases arise where vaccinated individuals are still contracting COVID-19. They might be asymptomatic and they can pass it on to somebody else, whether that person is vaccinated or not. And so what you're seeing, I think, is locker rooms across the NFL saying, we want the peace of mind. We want to be tested daily. Don't incentivize it. You know, for us who are vaccinated, we still want to know where we stand every single day. So, A, I'm not getting it from a teammate who might have tested positive and not know it. Or B, I'm not passing it on to somebody else. And I thought it was interesting. NFL Chief Medical Officer Dr. Alan Sills, he said, you know, people tend to focus on safety, and it's very important that we realize that testing is not prevention, Sills said. He said, testing is not preventing anyone from transmitting the virus. It is one part of our mitigation strategy, but it's not the key part. He said, testing is obviously something that is helpful and it can be beneficial, but we try to apply it in a targeted and intelligent manner, and we try to test those people that are more at risk, and that's what we'll continue to recommend, but it's not testing that will get us through this surge or the future of our season here. I thought that that was interesting. So he's clearly not of the stance that you need to be testing players every single day. Of course, testing players vaccinated or unvaccinated every single day comes at a high cost as well.
Yeah,
so let's not forget about that. I feel like this is maybe the league's way of trying to mitigate it. So it'll be interesting to see which side, the NFLPA or the league, wins out here. But at least testing vaccinated people once a week is better than leaving it to a 2 weeks window.
Yeah, and Dr. Sills had said on that conference call with media members on Thursday that nearly 93% of players in the NFL are fully vaccinated, and I think it's 99%, just almost 100% of all staffers that have to be vaccinated, whether that's, you know, coaches, trainers, personnel staff, anybody who's in building in that Tier 1 or Tier 2 status, they have to be vaccinated. So the league is seeing an increase in numbers, but I think when it comes to players, if you're not vaccinated at this point, you're not probably going to go get it with, you know, 2 weeks till the start of the regular season. That's something that I think the league has come to a realization of. But remember, this was the NFL proposing to the NFLPA the increase in testing a once a week thing here. The NFLPA was the group, to their credit, earlier this offseason, before training camp even begun, they were the ones who recommended the testing be the same. The cadence be the same for both vaccinated and unvaccinated players. Now it appears that the NFL and its increased proposal for COVID-19 testing, it kind of feels like that's all been, you know, pretty much accepted, just shy of accepted by the NFLPA, which released a statement to ESPN saying, quote, the COVID-19 environment is constantly changing and our success last year was built not only on a foundation of cooperation, but more importantly on listening to our experts. It is clear what we know about the Delta variant and with what we have already seen with clubs, testing needs to be a greater focal point. So we'll see here with just 2 weeks until the start of the regular season if the NFL and the NFLPA come to an agreement here on increasing testing for vaccinated players. Now that would be going from once every 14 days down to once every 7 days, and it will remain the same for unvaccinated players who have to test daily before they are allowed to enter into their club's respective facilities. This is Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Straight ahead, we'll get into Cam Newton's absence in New England and how it's impacted the quarterback battle for the Patriots. That's straight ahead. Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.